At Blue Mountain Christian University, undergraduate and graduate degrees can be completed fully online across a range of academic fields. From business and education to technology and healthcare, programs are designed for learners who want the flexibility of online study without coming to campus. Courses are offered in 8-week sessions. Learn more at bmc.edu. Move mountains at Blue Mountain Christian University.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Brother Fred Jackson.
Howdy.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. People may be wondering, why do they call each other brothers? Well, they're not brothers, but we're brothers in the Lord, right?
Amen.
That's right.
Brothers in the Lord.
Absolutely.
It's been a tradition since the early church, probably. Sister.
Right there in that there Bible.
Yeah. Which version is that? That there Bible?
I'm not going to start that.
Okay.
I'll tell you which one I use. I do like the New American Standard. I've used that since I was in Bible college.
What about you, Fred?
NAS is good. And I like the New King James as well.
The New King James is good.
Yep.
The English Standard Version, good.
Yeah, which one's not good? Are you not going to incriminate yourself?
I don't care for some of the later New International Versions. I think have made some compromises. The Message Bible, it's not really a translation. Anyway, you can get
whatever
in
happened
trouble.
To the Living Bible. It was a paraphrase too, right? That wasn't, or was it? You remember the Living Bible from the 70s?
I think that may be a paraphrase.
I had one of those and from the 70s. But it was like the Bible in modern-day English, basically, is what it was. Mm-hmm. Fred, you ever use the Living Bible? You heard of
it? I read some verses from it, but I didn't own one.
Yeah.
It's explicitly classified as a paraphrase.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Not a direct translation from the original.
So there's nothing wrong with a paraphrase as long as it's noted as such, right? Would you agree with that?
My own personal opinion is I don't like them doing that because I'm looking at a picture. It says the Living Bible, which they do say English Biblical Paraphrase on the inside. But people at a Christian bookstore, if they are still brick and mortar stores still in existence, you walk around and you're saying, "Oh, how about this? This is a Bible," and so I don't like it.
Of course, you have the King James Bible, which is the Bible Jesus used, right? Isn't that what they...
Now, see, when I said don't get yourself in trouble...
I know. I'm just kidding. Let's get off that subject, right?
Yeah, I think I think we're already skating on thin ice
here. I don't know why
here.
I brought that up. It's just I was referencing why Christians call each other brother and sister, and a lot of non-Christians may wonder, what in the world are they talking about here? Why they do that? And that's the reason. It's spiritual.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual thing.
We're in the family of God.
Family of God. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We appreciate you listening to AFR. Fred, not a lot going on in the world, is there, Fred?
Oh, my. You know, the danger with some news stories is they're very, very, very important, but they go on for a long time, and people lose their interest. But that's a mistake.
Right.
And, you know, let's talk about what's going on in the Middle East. People, you know, February 28th started this battle, and we got into what some consider a lull, at a period when there was a blockade.
Talking about the war with Iran.
War with Iran. There was a bit of a lull there, but it has picked up once again. And this past weekend, we lost three of our best.
Yeah.
Three of our soldiers. One other soldier is missing. And we want to pray for the families of 25-year-old Tyler James Finn of Hawaii and 19-year-old Private Isabella Gonzalez of Carlton, Texas, because we lost those young people this weekend. The Iranians, and this is worthy of a broader discussion, how is it that the Iranians still have weapons and can send missiles and drones? These young people, these young soldiers of ours were in Jordan, and Iran fired, and this has all become part of the story. Iran now is firing at those countries in the Persian Gulf, Kuwait, Qatar, Jordan now is a target.
A lot of enemies.
And then we lost another soldier in Iraq, this young soldier who has not been identified yet. Apparently a missile landed and they were going to try to destabilize it. And that young person also died. So, you know, it brings it home once again. As I say, sometimes we get dull in our senses as to what's going on out there, but it's still very dangerous as what happened this weekend. And so the targets now, you remember what happened? There was a memorandum of understanding. We supposedly were in a ceasefire. And depending on who you talk to and what news agency you listen to, Iran broke that because it started firing on ships, trying to use the Strait of Hormuz to bring oil out of those Persian Gulf countries. And then at some point, President Trump said, enough of this. We're going to start hitting back. And for the ninth straight night now, the United States has resumed hitting a lot of military targets in Iran. And now Iran has started hitting desalination plants. And desalination plants in that part of the world are very, very important.
Okay, hold on just a minute. You're saying Iran, they're now firing on their neighbors.
Yes.
Who they say support the United States.
Yes, we have bases in a lot of these countries.
Okay. And we're using, so Iran is at war with the United States and anybody who supports the United States.
That is correct.
And now, are you saying then that Iran has said publicly that they are going to start targeting these, you call them
desalination,
which means converting ocean water to fresh water?
That is correct.
For drinking purposes?
And the United States is also targeting desalination plants in Iran.
Has that happened yet?
There have been, I think, at least one case of that so far.
Okay. Because, all right, here's a situation, and of course, I am just a average person observing this like everybody else. But it appears to me that President Trump, this is my opinion, okay? Just let me say this. It's my opinion. It appears to me that President Trump is holding back. Now, you might say, well, holding back? They've been bombing for 9 days in a row. That's hardly holding back. I think the United States could bomb the infrastructure of Iran, the water facilities, hear me out before you judge what I say, okay? The water facilities, the electrical grid, we know where these are. Mm-hmm. They could take that island that the oil is refined on, that is the main source of their economy over there, as I understand it. What's it called, the island?
Karg
Island. Now, not without a cost of losing some soldiers, because I'm sure they're ready for that, Iran. But I think he's holding back, President Trump is holding back, precisely because he doesn't want to create a massive humanitarian crisis. Okay? He's trying to get the regime of Iran to bend the knee, I guess you could say. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like anymore. But if you start doing what I've just described, which the U.S. military has the capability of doing, you're talking about a massive humanitarian crisis involving potentially millions of people in Iran who really have nothing to do with the regime. In fact, they're opposed to the regime. So he, President Trump, to me, has reached a point where if you don't, there's only so many bridges and, you know, military, quote, installations or military equipment that Iranians have that you can bomb, seems to me. Now, well, obviously, we haven't found them all because they're using them to kill our soldiers in Jordan, for example. So, but I think he may not admit this publicly, President Trump, although I don't know what would be wrong with admitting it publicly, because he's trying to hold back on, well, you would be charged with war crimes, for what that's worth, too. And it would escalate the war to a level that we don't know what would happen if you put millions of people at risk for no food, no water, no electricity. So does that make sense, what I've just described?
Yeah, he could be charged. I'm talking about President Trump. Could be
charged. If he did that?
Could be charged with war crimes. It is a little fuzzy. From my understanding, the war crimes, you are allowed to attack not only military sites, but also the infrastructure that supports the military. So you could probably, you know, target some of the, you know, like the power grid, those kinds of things. The water supply, like the desalination plants, that might get you into trouble in terms of war crimes, because that's a stretch to say that's supporting the military when it's obviously so critical to the general population. But all the other stuff you're saying is, I mean, we could, if we wanted to, we could do it. And whatever happened afterwards in terms of international disapproval, all that stuff would be an after effect.
But there's a reason we haven't done it.
I think the president does not want to break Iran like we did with Iraq. Remember, we broke the country, devastated the military, devastated their law enforcement. There was no one really to put in charge of it. We had to be in charge of it and rebuild it. I don't think the president wants to do that to Iran, because I think he is hoping to be able to hand off a country that still functions to the people of Iran. And if he blows it all to smithereens, obviously we're going to be in Iran repairing it and rebuilding it for another 10 years.
Mm. You know, Marco Rubio, our Secretary of State, was asked about all of this on the weekend. This is what he had to say, cut number four.
I think we're always open to diplomacy. It has to be real. It has to be a deal that they're willing to live by. Look, Iran a week ago was supposed to put out a statement saying that the Straits of Hormuz would be open, that they would no longer attack shipping. And instead of doing that, they attacked three ships. I think that was last Friday or Saturday. So, I mean, their behavior has to change in order for ours to change.
And then there's Rob Spalding. Interesting comment from him. He's a retired Air Force general. He says, keeping the Strait of Hormuz will take a military commitment for a long time. And that's the big prize right now, is to keep that strait open. Cut five.
It's certainly not surprising to see. I don't think anybody is surprised that the Iranians aren't going to follow their agreement. And I think this is something that's going to have to continue as a result. I think they're trying to create a pathway so that we can control the strait. I think that they're reducing the distance that arms from Iran can travel to shipping. And so in doing that, I think we're setting up for something like Operation Southern and Northern Watch, where it's going to be a long time that we're there to keep the strait open.
Well, a long time, but, you know, you always go back to the Iranians are well aware we have an election coming up. We're getting ever closer to that. And if you believe the polls that have been done with the American people, they want this thing to wrap up. And if we're still there and the Iranians are still shooting at our people at those various bases in the Persian Gulf, it's going to be very difficult for the president and for the Republicans.
Yeah, and like you said, whoever, I'm not sure anybody knows who's in charge of Iran. In fact, when they started, when somebody started firing on these ships, there was some question over who was doing it. And I think some of those who were negotiating with the U.S. from Iran were saying, look, that's a faction. We're not in charge of them. So these factions know this about the United States. You know, our leaders are not appointed for life. They're not dictators. They got to go. They got to regularly run for re-election. And these kinds of issues like ongoing wars can be politically detrimental. Then these folks over there know that.
You know, there was another development in the last 3 or 4 days. Kind of interesting. Didn't get a lot of play. The Iraqi prime minister, Al-Falah al-Zaida, was in Washington last week.
The Iraqi prime minister.
Iraqi prime minister.
Okay.
Now have a listen what happened there. While he was in town, the Iraqi officials signed $60 billion worth of deals with some of our oil companies like Chevron, et cetera, et cetera. What's really interesting is that part of the deals is alternative ways to get oil out of that country to the West. Now, what they're talking about is building a pipeline, and I think Chevron may be involved with this, building a pipeline from the southern part of Iraq that would go up north and would go to ports, Syrian ports, a Syrian port, and a Turkish port. You put all this together, what the president's been up to. President Trump in Turkey recently for that meeting. And then he had he's had the Syrian head. He's been talking with Iraq. So President Trump is building bridges with these other countries. There's also talk of Saudi Arabia building a pipeline to the Red Sea. But the Houthis are, could be a problem there in Yemen with that. Yeah. So there's some interesting developments. While fighting to open up the Strait of Hormuz, there's also another track that's going on here for alternatives to the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, my head's hurting right now. I don't know about you guys here trying to figure out that we got to, now we're getting more players. We're talking about the Houthis.
Yes.
Houthis.
You got the Blowfish. They're coming in there too, you know, trying to disrupt things.
Houthis and the Blowfish.
Yeah. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. All right, what does this mean for gas at the pump for the average American, though?
This morning, as of this morning, we're talking $90 a barrel. Back up again.
I don't pay for barrels, Fred. Maybe you do.
$4. $4.
$4 a gallon.
Nationally.
Nationally. That's the average.
Yes. And where I buy my gas went up 30 cents this weekend a gallon.
Okay. Because the... It went down for a while.
It did. I was happy.
Well, last week we were talking about how the price of gas had fallen precipitously.
Yes.
You know?
I was getting it for $3.11 in our market, but it was up close to $3.40.
They're averaging $4 a gallon right now, today,
for the
average American. When do you think Americans begin to say, hey, this is getting out of hand? I'm talking about the price of gas, $5? $5 a gallon?
Ooh, that would
be way out of hand.
That'd
be out of two hands.
Yeah. Huh? I think if you get to, I just here where we live in Northeast Mississippi, I'm with Fred. When you're $3 and then in the teens, that felt pretty good. Although it was in $2 and something just a couple of years ago, but you start getting into $4.50 a gallon, $4.60 a gallon, that becomes...
People start complaining.
Oh, they're probably complaining now, but I'm not sure people can handle that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it won't do that, but the average price nationally for a gallon of gas in the U.S. is $4 right now, and we will see what happens. But we're like...
We seem to be
stuck.
Oh, we're stuck. Huh? We're stuck, Jerry. Just go back to Seinfeld.
Would that be George?
Are we either that or Kramer?
Are we? So we're stuck over there in the Middle East?
But, we were just talking about the price of a gallon of gas at the pump.
Yeah.
This is why President Trump is hesitant to start blowing up the oil depots on Karg Island. We've hit some military targets there, but we have not hit their oil infrastructure. I don't think you want to close off Iran as a source of oil. That's going to cause the price of a barrel of oil to skyrocket. All these ideas, even of Iraq maybe building
a pipeline.
Pipelines. The best thing, because the pipeline would go from Iraq through Syria to the Mediterranean, or through Saudi Arabia to the Red Sea. I'm guessing
just a real stable part of the world.
Well, then you got to go around. If you go into the Mediterranean, you got to go through.
Ed's using his fingers, people.
I'm using those
watching on YouTube or Facebook. Ed's got both hands.
I got diagrams.
He's got
here.
His fingers going, showing us where the pipeline's going to run over there.
But that would take time to build the pipeline. The best solution is to open up the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
The only way that's happening is if you get rid of the regime running the country of Iran. And we're stuck because there's no easy way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're stuck.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you could blow them to smithereens.
Right.
And then you'd be unstuck, so to speak, but then you would have unintended consequences that could affect the world economy in ways we can't really understand right now.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And that's the potential.
But we do know the way it would affect the world economy would be bad.
Yeah.
We just don't know how bad.
Yeah. When do you think President Trump has to go to Congress for approval for being at war, or do you think that doesn't matter anymore?
That's a puzzle to me. We're kind of well past the 3 months when the president could do it without congressional approval. The problem for those opposed to it is if you say, no, the president cannot retaliate for us losing three soldiers or three service people, okay, then the Democrats, for example, or even some Republicans would get in political trouble. As long as we are attacking Iran in retaliation for them killing service members, then I don't think Congress is going to.
But I thought, isn't there a 90-day or something like that?
Yes, and then Congress can approve it at 30 days.
But we passed that. I don't hear Democrats crying for a vote. I don't see a big outcry for a vote. Maybe I'm missing.
But I think the argument is, once the ceasefire was put in place,
then
they start all over again.
Talking about that 24-hour ceasefire we had going on?
Yeah.
That was a breath of fresh air, wasn't it? We just had a 24-hour memorandum of
understanding.
We didn't even get through putting the ink on that thing.
I guess some people didn't get the memo.
I guess memorandum of understanding. Well, you know, it's we're laughing a little bit here, but because it's just crazy. What's in with a small C, maybe a capital C before long. Hopefully, it doesn't get to that. But the sobering part of the whole situation is that we have now lost. We lost two soldiers. Three, potentially.
In Jordan and then one in Iraq.
Missing.
Right.
American soldiers have died over the weekend.
17 altogether since this conflict started. Yeah.
17 altogether. And another sobering part of this is there just seems to be no... We seem to be boxed in, seems to me, on what to do next because our hands are tied in the sense that we can't do what you would need in the old days would have been done. People would have just, America, you know, whatever country attacked whatever country would just obliterate them.
Yeah.
Without care for the people.
Right.
The innocent people. And I think President Trump, rightfully so, is considering the plight of the innocent people in Iran and how much do you bomb to where it becomes a humanitarian crisis for the people.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by your hands are, at least you got one hand tied behind your back.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on American Family Radio. Stay with us.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
So he came to a city of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and so Jesus, wearied as he was with his journey, sat down beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. Palestine in the time of Jesus was divided into three sections. In the south was Judea, the region where Christ was born. In the north was Galilee, the region where Christ grew up. In between Judea and Galilee was Samaria. The scriptures tell us of a journey Jesus took through Samaria. It also reminds us that Jews did not normally travel through Samaria. In fact, the Jews considered the Samaritans such a low-class people that no self-respecting Jew had any dealing whatsoever with a Samaritan. We know that Jesus and his disciples stopped at Jacob's well in Samaria to rest and eat. The disciples left Jesus at the well and went into Sychar to get some food. It was about noon, and Jesus was resting at the well, waiting for the return of his disciples. As he waited, a Samaritan woman came to the well to draw water. To the casual reader, there's nothing unusual about this. But to one who is familiar with the customs of the day, the oddity is immediately recognized. No woman ever drew water in the middle of the day. Only work absolutely necessary was performed while the heat was so intense. Women drew their water at the close of the day, when temperatures were much cooler. It was a social event for the village women, and as they drew water, they could catch up on the latest gossip. Evidently, the respectable women had so ignored, excluded, and embarrassed this woman that she came to draw water at a time when she would be sure no one else would be present. Then Jesus did a very unusual thing. He spoke to the Samaritan woman. He asked her for a drink, and the request opened up a conversation which was to change her life. She replied to his request by reminding him of the racial prejudice between the Jews and Samaritans. But then Christ lifted her vision to a higher plane by offering her living water. When she again injected the race issue into the conversation by mentioning the Samaritan temple on Mount Gerizim, located to the south and visible from Jacob's well, Christ reminded her that the place where one worshiped was unimportant. The important part of worship was the how, in spirit and truth. It is of supreme importance that Christ first revealed his identity to this woman of the world, married five times, and living with a sixth man. To the Jew, this woman was as low a human as one could be. It is significant that John included this story in his gospel. None of the other gospels contained it. Here is Christ revealing for the first time his messiahship to a sinful Samaritan woman. In effect, John is saying that God's love reaches to the very lowest and least of all people. The love of God knows absolutely no limits. You can still drink from Jacob's well today. Each time I stop there, I pause to drink from the very deep stream. For centuries and centuries, the well has been giving life. But each time I drink, I'm reminded of the living water which Christ gave to that Samaritan woman. And, like he said, this living water is available to us no matter who we are or where we worship. Indeed, God's love knows no limits.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, we've got some great tours lined up for March of 2027. We've got one tour we call the Footsteps of Paul tour. That's mainly in Greece, or only in Greece, including Athens and Corinth and Thessalonica. And then we've got a separate tour to Italy, where we're going to Venice and Florence and Pisa and Rome and all the sites of Italy. So you can do both of these tours if you want to. We've arranged that as well.
Also, this tour of Italy, it's not like the Olive Garden tour of Italy, you know. This is, we're really going there to Italy to see Italy and to eat Italian food too as well. So for information on any of the tours I've mentioned here, go to tours.afa.net. Tours.afa.net, tours.afa.net.
You love him even though you have never seen him. Though you do not see him now, you trust him. And you rejoice with a glorious, inexpressible joy. The reward for trusting him will be the salvation of your souls. 1 Peter 1, 8 through 9.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred. And we're gonna break down the riveting World Cup final game yesterday in New York City. Which,
deep dive. We're going to go do a deep dive.
Yeah, it ended up after a back and forth, just whiplash of your head watching it on TV, which I didn't do, to a 1-0 score. And listen, I didn't grow up with soccer, so I don't know all the – I didn't grow up playing it much or watching, so I don't know all the rules. I don't know all the strategy. I just know, for me, I've got to have more than one goal in a game. I need some more scoring. And this is from a baseball fan who, well, you don't often have scored, but one, I guess 1-0 would be for a rabid soccer fan, that'd be a great game because it's great defense, right?
I don't know.
Spain won out.
I don't know what the reason would be.
You don't either.
No.
Spain beat Argentina, by the way.
Spain beat Argentina. And let me just, for those of you not familiar with soccer, or as they say in the rest of the world, football,
yeah,
let me explain to you in the technical language.
Please do.
That Spain won in extra innings. Okay, because they didn't even win in 90 minutes of regulation.
Right.
It went into extra time.
But Spain won the World Cup yesterday in New York. They beat Argentina. So it was really fascinating because all these teams from countries from around the globe, they gathered, kind of like the Olympics, except it's one sport, one time every 4 years, and it's the biggest deal in the world in terms of sporting events, bigger than the Super Bowl, bigger than anything, the most watched, because you have a global audience. Because why? Because soccer is played around the world and loved,
yeah,
around the world.
And increasingly so, loved in this country. A lot of,
yeah,
people like it. We have a lot of people who are here, both legally and illegally, who came into this country with a love for soccer.
I think it's time that our U.S. team start taking some illegals. Because we're not winning with legals, doesn't appear to me, Ed. We need to put some NIL money out there. No, I'm just kidding. Listen, it is over now. Was it a month long?
I think it was a month.
I think it provided a lot of help to our American economy because you had all these tourists who were following their teams from around the world.
And helped our image.
Especially
in Europe. Mm-hmm. The people who came over here fell in love with the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all those reports about the Europeans, especially the Europeans,
yep,
not only the Europeans, but others from around the world who got to experience the USA.
Yeah.
So it was good publicity for us.
It was also in Canada and Mexico.
Mexico, that's right. Mm-hmm. So they had the ceremony yesterday after the, by the way, the Spain and Argentina had a little extracurricular activities.
They did.
After the match was over, they decided to take on boxing, or MMA fighting, add that to the World Cup.
And then Argentina, they all turned their players turned their backs on Spain when they were getting the trophy.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. They turned their backs because there was roughhousing at the end. And, you know, probably a lot of trash talking. And so instead of facing...
Did they both talk Spanish? I know the Spaniards do. I don't know enough of it.
Argentina.
Brazil talks Portuguese.
I think Argentina I think that's Spanish.
Spanish, so they both talk Spanish. Probably got an accent.
A southern accent.
A southern accent. Anyway, the World Cup is now officially over. Did you see, Fred, President Trump went to New York?
I saw the pictures, yes.
He was on the field, and the Secret Service is following him around on the field. It looked kind of odd.
Yeah.
They probably didn't vote for that one.
Yeah.
Secret Service.
It would be harder to protect the president.
He's in the open field.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, you have massive security there.
Yeah.
Still out of... on the one hand, you go, well, I admire President Trump because he's not letting fear stop him from doing what he otherwise would do.
Yeah.
So that's kind of in his nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty brave man.
Yes, he is.
Okay. So, but on the other hand, if you're the Secret Service, you're going, excuse me?
Right.
Mr. President, you're doing what? You're walking out in the middle of an open field?
With people running around?
We can't guarantee your safety.
He was booed probably by some of the fans, especially of Spain, because President Trump had some harsh. He was upset with Spain.
Yeah,
and he had some hard words to say about Spain. You know, losers, and you know that kind of thing. But so a lot of the fans when he appeared. They booed him. So what I'm saying is you don't want some nut job to go and take a swing at the president because he had talked about your country last week or whenever. So I'm sure, to your point, it was a pretty nervous moment for the Secret Service to protect the president.
So anyway, President Trump was there. The trophy was given to the Team Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And they're celebrating in Madrid and other parts of that country today as they have.
And is this they're every
on top
4 years?
They literally are on top of the world now.
Is this every 4 years?
Every 4 years.
Where's the next
one going to be, Ed?
I don't know.
Well, why don't you look it up?
I am looking up what he said, what President Trump said about Spain.
You don't want to quote that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he did soften his rhetoric afterwards, but he wanted to cut off all trade with Spain because Spain would not commit to the 5% for NATO, and described Spanish leadership as hopeless, bad people. And so that obviously led to
fans of Spain booing
the president.
Booing Trump.
Where's
the next World Cup?
I will check on that. Fred, you can contribute to the show anytime you want.
Sure.
Where's the next World Cup, Fred?
Oh, I'll let Ed.
World Cup be held.
Yeah. Like,
all right.
Like 2030.
So it'll be 2030.
Yeah.
We'll be hosted by Spain.
Are you serious?
Yep. Portugal and Morocco, with special opening matches held in Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay.
Are you going?
Am I going?
Yeah.
No.
You going over there for that?
No. I didn't even go to the ones in my country.
Okay.
I'm not.
All right.
I don't want to.
So that's ironic. Spain wins the World Cup, and now they're hosting.
They'll host the next one. And I guess it's kind of like we did with, you know, U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
Yeah.
Spain, Portugal, and then Morocco across the Strait of Gibraltar.
You don't think that Iran's going to close that too, do you?
I think they'd have a hard time closing that strait. But.
Okay. Well, they've been big on straits here recently.
Yeah. Well, they're in favor of straits and not in favor of LGBTQ.
Right. So that's true. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Fred. Fred, what's your next news story?
Well, Britain has a new prime minister this morning. It's prime minister number 7 in the last 10 years.
It's hard to keep up with them.
It's hard to keep up.
What in the world? Why can't they keep a prime minister in office?
It's tough to keep your job over there as prime minister. They got kind of tired of Keir Starmer, and they've put in place a former mayor of Manchester. His name is Andy Burnham.
Let me just stop you right there, Fred. I know we haven't. I wouldn't trust a politician named Andy. Okay, he sounds like a character out of Toy Story, And I'm just, I can't so think
if
that guy
if
seriously.
It were Andrew, would you have more respect?
Andrew.
Okay.
Why is he
okay.
Andrew?
Okay. Okay.
Hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
So, Prime Minister Andy, you're just, you don't think that's going to command
like
a lot
it.
Of respect.
I don't like it.
No.
Okay.
Anyway,
and he's
sorry.
And he's going to be known as Andy the Socialist. Because he let it be known even last Friday when the Labor Party had their vote send him to the head of their party, that he didn't like Margaret Thatcher at all. And he says, we're going to be the opposite of Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher, she's been gone a long time.
Yes.
Why is he bringing her name up?
Well, he doesn't like the private enterprise. He wants to give the government more control. That sounds kind of like democratic socialists here in America.
Yeah.
Piers Morgan. I think most of our listeners are familiar with Piers
Morgan.
He did a report card on Andy this morning, cut number 8.
He's a self-acclaimed socialist. He's proud of it. He's, as you say, the 7th prime minister my country's had in 10 years. And I would say to Fox viewers, just imagine if you'd had 7 different presidents in 10 years, how absurd that would feel. We've had 5 in 4 years. There is a cat at number 10 Downing Street, the home of the British Prime Minister, called Larry. Larry the cat. He was adopted in David Cameron's tenure in 2011. That cat has outsurvived 7 different prime ministers. It is a complete joke.
Do you think the cat's involved at all?
Yes, it's Larry the assassin. You know what? To be honest, it kind of sums up how farcical this has become.
That wow. is a funny exchange. Who was the Fox host that said that?
Pierce Morgan?
No, Pierce Morgan? The one who's asking about the cat. You think the cat's involved?
Oh, I think it was Brian Kilmeade. Yeah.
That's funny. Oh. But to my earlier point, Larry the cat, Andy the prime minister, it sounds like a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Mm-hmm. So they got a new prime minister. Now, in Britain, they have the parliamentarian system of government.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Which is the way it is most European countries, I would guess, and some in the Middle East. Well, Israel, most of the Middle East is dictatorships.
Right.
Huh? A parliamentarian system of government, you have certain thresholds to meet, and you can call for a national election, and there's nothing on the schedule. Right, now, not like in the U.S.
Not like
we
4
have,
years.
Like in the U.S., we have a schedule where we have a presidential election every 4 years, but in these parliamentarian systems of government, you could have them every month.
But this wasn't even the people of Britain didn't have a say in this.
Oh, why?
This is the Labour Party got tired of their leader Keir Starmer, got tired of him. He gets the boot.
He stepped down, didn't he?
Yeah.
He
had no support.
Yeah.
He gets the boot, and they have a little convention, the Labour Party.
Yeah.
You know, and they say, this is the guy we want. They voted for him on Friday. Bang, he becomes prime minister today.
Is the Labour Party in Britain akin to the Democrat Party in the U.S.?
I would say so.
Are they
so.
Ideological twins?
I would say so, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Maybe a little further down the socialist rabbit trail.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but they're.
You know, you just wonder as you look at Europe today. You just wonder. In 25 years, are we going to even recognize the Europe that we even know today, because of the massive immigration that they've experienced from the Middle East and from North Africa? You combine that with the lack of that they don't have babies. The natives, I'm talking about, the native Europeans, don't have babies. That's a combination for a shift in demographics that will be radical, as I say, in 25 years from now. Am I right?
Could be. I mean, we're talking about by the middle of this century, and certainly by the end of the century, demographers who study demographics, and that is the study of changes in population. There are some demographers who say there might not be any Italians left,
yeah,
or Russians left.
50 years from now, 100 years from now,
yeah,
we're going, what happened? The lost the lost people of Italy.
Yes.
You know, that's going to be a special on TV.
Yeah. So, and because they're not having enough kids to replace the adults. So that's what they call a replacement rate. So if in developed countries, if you want to population-wise replace two parents, you've got to have 2.1 kids. I know that sounds funny, but that 0.1 helps a country cover infant mortality. But obviously, if you have two parents, you got to have two kids to replace them. If those two parents only have one child, and everyone does that, your population is cut in half in one generation. And then if that one child marries the one child from next door, and they only have one child, the population is cut in half again. The same thing is actually happening in China as well. Japan may have the lowest fertility rate in the developed world. So this is a really serious thing. Elon Musk talks about it a lot. We've been talking about it, you know, 10, 12, 15 years, because this became a big thing about 10, 12, 15 years
ago.
What's
the birth rate in the U.S.?
It is now below replacement rate.
Is it 1.9?
I will check. For a long time, the U.S. had a replacement rate that was sufficient to keep the population stable, but that has gone down, I think, in the last
We've become
couple
like
of years.
Europe, you mean? So becoming like Europe?
Yes. So the United States, the total fertility rate has been significantly below the replacement rate of 2.1 births per woman. So the rate in 2023 fell to 1.62 births in 2023, and in 2024, 1.6. So it has been declining.
And you got to have what, 2.1?
You got to have 2.1 for an adequate replacement rate.
That can't continue, or
it can't. You know, there's places in Germany. I wrote an article on this about 10 years ago, and at that time, there were small towns and cities in Germany where they had to go. This sounds a little out there. They had to go back. They had to go and change the water pipes and the sewage lines because they were not large enough. The sewage lines were not large enough to carry the waste away because there weren't enough people. So they had to put a smaller diameter of pipes in some of these towns. And that is just a bizarre situation. But
why do you think that is, Fred? Why do you think the West is not having or not having babies? At least not enough to.
Yeah, some of the studies that I've read, and we've done some stories on that with American Family News, is that young couples are either delaying getting married, or they're getting married much later. And
oh, that's noticeable.
Yeah, and the women are saying, I want to stay in the career because the money is needed to pay for housing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a combination. As I say, couples are waiting very late, or not getting married at all is the other factor. They've decided to stay single because they want to make money, and they believe that is their purpose in life, is just to enjoy life, and kids get in the way.
I'd also say that absolutely what Fred is saying, that's probably the main driver. But abortion rates,
yes,
also, and a lot of these countries like Russia abort a lot of babies. China aborted a lot of babies during its Cultural Revolution, especially girls. They didn't want girls because girls can have babies, so they encouraged parents who became pregnant to abort their baby if they had a girl. Now, this is interesting that in the months following the overturn of Roe versus Wade in the United States, states with total abortion bans experienced a 1.57% increase in monthly birth rates in 2023, amounting to approximately an extra 14,500 births across 13 states. It's not huge, but it is a contributing factor.
I would add one other thing. You guys have mentioned the reasons why the people in the West, and you, if you talk about Americans and Canadians too, which are part of the West, not having enough babies to have to replace people who are dying. That's the replacement.
Right.
Okay. Then you have to say the birth control pill, right?
Yeah, that would be
that that revolutionized. And then you have abortion, and then you have delay. The people aren't getting. This is just an observation. I have no stats on this, but I'm just guessing the average age of marriage has gone up on average 5 years in the last 20 years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, Allison, my wife and I, we got married. I was 21. She was 20. If you get married 21 and 20 today, people look at you like you have three heads. You're what? You're getting married. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. That's like you're just a baby. I mean, I think this is not I'm not judging anybody on this. I'm just saying that I think the average age of marriage has probably shifted five.
Well, I've got some stats.
You have some stats?
Interestingly enough.
Bring forth unto us stats, Ed.
So according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the median age at first marriage in 2023-2024 reached a historic high in the United States.
Okay, well then.
With men marrying at an average age of 30.2,
wow.
Women at 28.4. This represents a significant rise from the mid-century low in 1956 when men married at 22.5 years old and women at 20.1 years. So for men, it is since 1956, it has gone, the average age of marriage has gone up 8 years.
Wow.
It's gone up
eight
years for women as well.
Well, there you go. That's a big part of the explaining why the birth rate's
well,
gone down.
Well, if women especially wait till 28 to get married, that's probably going to shrink the number of kids they'll have. And the number of kids eventually that they're able to have.
Sure it is.
You may get it to age 35, 36. You've already got one. Should we get two, three? And now you're getting to where that's not as likely.
Right. Yeah. So that would explain. So I am my general observation has been
borne out by the facts.
Borne out by the facts. So the average age from in the 50s was 22 years old.
Well,
for
that was
for a man.
It was that was the lowest point in the century, the 1900s, 1956. Men married at 22.5 age, women at 20.1. My mom and dad got married. My dad was 28. He was a little bit older because he had gone into the Marines first. And then to college, but my mom was married at 20.
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah, it was 1957.
My wife, I mean, she was 20 when we got married.
My mom was 19.
Yep. 19. Well, what? And it wasn't uncommon back in before the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
That people got married. They got
out of high school
in their teens.
Yeah,
I think my grandmother was like one of my grandmothers was like 15 or 16.
Well, girls are certainly able.
And she had five children.
Yeah.
So, you mean, this is pre-birth control.
Right.
Pills. And
I forgot about the birth control. That was a good point because that has given women the ability to say, I can put it off without any, quote-unquote, accidental children after marriage.
I would say probably pre-1950, the average married couple had probably average 3 to 4 kids, huh?
Yeah, and
I
then
mean, three kids was a small family back in the day.
And after World War II, there was a baby boom.
Baby boom, yeah. I'm glad there was.
You and me both.
All right, we'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.